You are Locked On Wizards, your daily Washington Wizards podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Did you call game? I called game.
Gilbert, fade away.
And welcome back to another edition of the Locked On Wizards podcast, your daily conversation about the NBA team known as the Washington Wizards. Ben Standing here. Hope you guys are having, or maybe by this point you're hearing this, had a great Memorial Day weekend. Hope you got to spend time with your family and friends. And of course, remember, think about a little bit at least to why the holiday exists at all. Honor those who served. I am talking to you guys on Monday. We don't take breaks here on the Locked On Wizards podcast. I've got another great podcast coming up for you today. Mr. Dan Feldman with NBC Sports' Pro Basketball Talk is here. We're going to talk about a couple of different topics. One, he's written a couple things about John Wall in recent days, including a breakdown of his contract situation. It's very complicated, to be honest with you. It's not just as simple as, you know, option A or B. Dan has some great insight into that, so we're going to get into all things about that. Also, it's NBA Finals week, and Dan is a guy that covers the league, so we're going to talk Warriors, Cavs, and a whole bunch more there. I will also say that I posted on Monday the first of our player reviews. The first one up, Mr. Otto Porter, Bobby Bancroft, my pal, joined me yesterday, meaning Sunday, to discuss all things Otto Porter, including who is the most important person in Otto's life this summer. There's a few options, and we discuss which one is the most important. And of course, yes, plenty of max contract talk and some other fun stuff. So check all that out. You can of course find the podcast on iTunes or Stitcher or Audioboom. Before I bring Dan on, the Wizards announced today that they will essentially hold their first formal pre-draft workout on Tuesday. Some interesting names attending, most notably Melo Trimble, point guard for the University of Maryland. Obviously, well-known in these parts. Potential second-round pick. The Wizards definitely need a point guard. Also in this mix, Monty Morris, a point guard from Iowa State. So, two guys who definitely are going to be pretty interesting names to track over the next few weeks. But I'm sure there'll be a lot of people there for Melo Trimble. Workout in particular. I will be there as well, and I'll talk to you guys about that on Tuesday. All right, let me get to Mr. Dan Feldman right now. All right, and as promised, on the line with me is Mr. Dan Feldman from NBC Sports' Pro Basketball Talk. You can, of course, follow him on Twitter at Dan Feldman NBA, and there's no better time to do that than right now because it's NBA Finals time and Dan has things to say. Mr. Feldman, happy Memorial Day weekend. How are we doing on NBA Finals week?
Trying to find something to write about. This 9-day layoff is tough.
It really is. Like it, you know what? You probably have a good. You can probably address it. I know. I have people constantly saying to me, "How can the NBA not have any games on Memorial weekend?" And I keep trying to explain, like nobody projected a 4-game sweep and a 5-game series in the conference finals, and then the rest of it is, you know, television. They just have to, you know, television just can't alter its plans because the NBA, you know, ended early. So unfortunately, we're stuck. We've got nothing to watch here over the weekend. I mean, pretty much it just comes down to that, right?
I had somebody ask me, I didn't have a great answer. Like, why can't they alter it and start it earlier? Because I don't think this layoff is good for TV ratings. I think people, at least somewhat, are feeling a little like, well, look, I've gone a week without the NBA. It was fine. Maybe I'm just kind of done with it. And obviously a lot of people still tune in, like Cavaliers-Warriors is a big draw. But I do wonder, couldn't they move up the finals? Like, wouldn't that be better?
Oh, I mean, I think it would be better. I guess the only question is, and again, this is above my pay grade, but, you know, if the finals are going to be on ABC, right, presumably ABC has – you know, let's just say they wanted to have it on tonight. I don't even know what ABC has on its schedule tonight, but they have something on, and sponsors have been bought and paid for and all these things. So they would have to throw all that out, and then, you know, so I don't know. I assume that.
Yeah, I mean, they obviously in earlier rounds, and maybe it's just because it's a broadcast network and ABC that comes with complications of different programming. But obviously in earlier rounds, they don't always know the dates until the series is about to start.
Yeah, I think they just like have I think on TNT and ESPN, I don't think it's obviously nearly the issue, because especially, you know, ESPN's got multiple channels and TNT, you know, what else, you know, no offense TNT, but what else you got going on? So they can just move things around, whatever. But yeah, I guess it's when it comes to the network, that, you know, they got to pick dates and go from there. But in any event, it is a bummer that we've got this big lag time. Game one's still not till Thursday. We're talking on Monday, so we still got a few days even now. We will, as I said at the top, Dan and I will talk about some things he's written recently about John Wall, including his contract situation, and it's not as easy as simply saying it's choice A or choice B, and Dan is going to help us walk through that. But let's start with the NBA Finals, Dan. I told my listeners after the Wizards lost to the Celtics that I was going to have to take sort of a mental break from from watching all the basketball, and I probably picked a good time to do it because those series were not very entertaining based on the little bit I watched and and all the Twitter had to tell me and things that I've read. We got to where we all think we knew we were going to end up a year ago, but those two series weren't too interesting. The two narratives, though, that seem to be coming out of it all and entering the finals are the following. LeBron James versus Michael Jordan, we're back to this again, and potentially, it seems like even with a little more vigor from the pro-LeBron side of things, because it's, what, seven straight finals he's reached. You know, he's coming off beating Golden State last year. If he could do it again, what, you know, that could mean he and Jordan are equal. Some people I've already heard say they're at least on the same level now. But on the flip side, I have people telling me the Golden State's a prohibitive favorite, even though LeBron's on Cleveland, even though Steve Kerr, Golden State's coach, is probably not going to coach in the finals. And instead Golden State will be coached by the guy LeBron more or less had fired in Cleveland, even though, Golden State, I think, has the worst starter of either team, depending on which guy they have at center. That guy is going to be the worst starter. And, oh, by the way, Cleveland beat Golden State last year. So I'm sort of confused as to how we're having one argument about whether LeBron is equal to Michael, and on the other hand, saying that Cleveland's a prohibitive underdog in this series. Help explain that to me.
Well, I think it's because that if LeBron is the best player in the series, the second best player and third best player, whatever order you want to slot them, are Steph Curry and Kevin Durant. The third best player is probably Draymond Green. And then you can throw in Kyrie Irving and then debate about Kevin Love or Klay Thompson. But when the 2, 3, 4 best players are all on one team and MVP, the top two are MVP caliber themselves, it's tough for one person to overcome, even if it is LeBron.
But I mean, of course, you know, I think I saw Mark Stein with ESPN had the stat that there will be 7 All-Stars in this finals, the most in any final since 1983. So that definitely shows you there's a lot of firepower going on here. But of course, like I always look, you know, try to look beyond. I mean, so you're right. The Golden State, if you rank them, those All-Stars 1 to 7, you know, I don't know, maybe Klay is last, I don't know, but even if he's not, Golden State has guys probably 2, 3, and 4, I agree with you there. But I guess, you know, if the other team has 3 All-Stars, it's not like it's a true underdog situation. I guess it's sort of maybe my larger point. If Cleveland had won more games in the regular season, and they had a Game 7 at home, I suspect they would be the favorite in the finals. But does this all really come down to, if we get past the headliners, we get past sort of that legacy stuff, does it all come down to that Cleveland's defense is just not very good and people don't really see how they're going to stop Golden State's offense?
That's most of it to me. The Cavs defense in the regular season would have been probably the worst regular season defense ever for a championship team if they win the title. Their defense against the Pacers, even though they swept the Pacers, was pretty bad. The Pacers scored a ton in that series. The Raptors' offense falls off every year, so I'm not really sure there's anything to see there. And then the Celtics, even after Isaiah Thomas got hurt, were scoring at a surprising rate, playing a style sort of similar to what the Warriors do, and obviously doing it with a lot less talent. Now, maybe that was just the Cavs not being ready to see that type of attack from the Celtics, not prepared for that. And then the Celtics changed on a dime when Isaiah Thomas went out, and maybe the Cavs will be more prepared in the finals. The Cavs also turned up their defense last year in the playoffs. So it is possible, but it'd be a pretty big turnaround from where that defense has been.
Yeah, and I know, and I think I speak for people who, you know, Wizards fans. It's why you can say simultaneously that Boston, you know, I guess you could say they were better than the Wizards. I mean, you know, neither team won on the road, so it's sort of, you know, they had the home court, they won, whatever. But why a lot of people think that the Wizards were the better team to go up against Cleveland, because the Wizards also, their defense wasn't so hot, but they could score a ton. And if you're going up against a team like Cleveland, where they matched up pretty well in the season, who also struggles to defend, that maybe that type of game would benefit the Wizards more than going up against Boston, where it was a little more, I wouldn't say it was grinded out. This isn't the old school Pat Riley Knicks era NBA, but, you know, it was a little more rugged because of the way the Celtics played. But it is what it is. As I said, I've been somewhat, because I've been dealing with the Wizards, and I checked out a little bit on this. I've watched Cleveland, but I haven't watched it too intently. I keep hearing people telling me that Kevin Love is playing at an extremely high level, not just offensively, but defensively, that he's maybe moving around as best as he's ever been. He's also shooting 47% from three. And last year in the playoffs, he wasn't, you know, he was dealing with injuries you know, and so on. So where are you at on the Kevin Love factor in all of this? Is he showing you enough to think that he's, you know, maybe can, you know, as I was saying sort of at the top, maybe his presence gives Cleveland more of a boost than people are sort of letting on, or not so much?
Maybe. He's definitely the player I probably have the closest eye on outside of LeBron, just because LeBron, everything with his legacy, and that's also important. And I guess maybe Durant, because he's sort of the swing in this from last year. But Love is going to be so important and so interesting, because 2 years ago, he just could not handle the Warriors. The way he was slow on the perimeter defensively, they just ate him alive when they played him in the regular season. And then obviously he wasn't there for the playoffs, but he had his problems throughout the finals last year. And then, of course, stepped up in the biggest moment and helped stop Steph Curry on that late possession when he got switched on him on the three-pointer. And he just looks more capable defensively of playing against this team, which could go a long way, because he's still and increasingly a very good three-point shooter, somebody who can really crash the offensive glass, which could be an area of liability for the Warriors. If Kevin Love can keep playing how he's playing, that would be huge for the Cavs. I'm not sure whether he can. I'm not saying that because I doubt it. I'm just saying because I legitimately don't know. It seems like Kevin Love looks more and more prepared to go against the Warriors the more we've seen him in Cleveland. I'm not sure that quite makes him prepared to go against the Warriors.
Yeah, no, I mean, you know, it's going to be fascinating, because neither one of these teams have been truly challenged, you know, in the playoffs, and now they're both going to go up against an insane force. I mean, Golden State's offense and just, you know, LeBron himself. And, you know, typically in sports, if a team has sort of been going up against lesser competition, when they have to meet that stepped up opponent, it can be jarring at times. But the fact that they're both having to deal with that, not to mention a long layoff for both of them, I don't even know what to make. It's going to happen in game one. It's going to be fascinating. One thing that's going to be fascinating for me is the fact that JaVale freaking McGee is now suddenly a weapon. I mean, I was listening to some ESPN radio over the weekend, and in a serious breakdown of the series, they were discussing how JaVale McGee is going to be a bigger weapon for Golden State than people realize, and it hurt my brain to hear that, considering having watched him here with the Wizards. And I totally get it. It's a different deal. And, you know, credit to JaVale McGee. He's grown up a little bit, I guess. As a player, he's not freelancing as much. He's not doing all those shacked and a fool things. He's doing what he's, you know, defending, protecting the rim and running the court. All that said, can we live in a world where JaVale McGee is an NBA champion? Is that going to be the end of times right there?
The pride of Flint, Michigan. I love the evolution of JaVale and how he's gotten to this point, because he always did good, productive things, and then would just mix in a ton of bonehead things with it. If you just cut down on the bonehead things, you're not going to eliminate them. The Warriors, as good as their culture is, as good as their coaching is, they haven't eliminated it. But they've, you know, I think we finally got over the point where JaVale McGee thought, like, yep, I'm the star. Like, he was kicked and sent down, and, like, he was on very low paying contracts and basically out of the league. Like, he kind of had to accept the role in a way he never did before. And when he does that, when he plays within himself, he's still this very long, very athletic, very talented center who's very good at some specific things and shouldn't do anything else.
No, nothing else. And it's one of those weird things. I mean, not to drag the Ernie Grunfeld into this, but, like, you know, obviously so much of what, when people rip the Grunfeld era, has to do with when they had Andre Blatch, JaVale McGee, Nick Young simultaneously. The Wizards weren't just, they weren't just doing a Sam Hinkie and sort of tanking. They were doing it in a very ungraceful way, because those three guys were just, you know, you couldn't wrap your arms around them at all. And yet at the same point, JaVale McGee is still in the league. He's now turned into productive, and obviously he's not the driving force to Golden State, but it sort of goes to show he's not a bust, but it took him a while to figure things out, and, you know, I don't blame the Wizards too much for that. He's got a lot of self-responsibility going into that one, but kudos to him, I guess, for figuring it out, or whatever. I should say kudos to Golden State for figuring out how to use him effectively. I'll give him that much.
I think JaVale deserves the most credit, but the Warriors being such a good passing team, and he's somebody who can finish lobs if you set him up, it's a real nice fit.
Yeah, absolutely. You mentioned before LeBron and Durant, and actually that was a question I had for you. Who do you think has more pressure on them this series between the two of them? Because I'll say this, on the one hand, you think it's LeBron, because LeBron always has the most pressure on him of maybe any athlete in American sports. That's the way it's felt like, at least, since he's been in the league. But, look, if he loses, and let's assume it's not a sweep or anything, but if he loses, you know, look, Golden State is considered to be this, you know, crazy dynasty. You know, they've got, you mentioned before, they've got arguably three of the four best players in the series. And LeBron, you know, he's LeBron. But Kevin Durant, he went to join a 73-win team. I know Golden State didn't win the finals last year, but arguably they should have, you know, with a 3-1 lead and all. If he comes in and doesn't win this, I mean, that's why he was coming here, to win this. I almost kind of think Durant has more pressure on him, because at least LeBron has a chip already. Where do you come in on that?
Look at you being all fair and everything. It's LeBron, because that's how we treat him. If he wins the finals, we'll talk about him being in this class with Michael Jordan. If he loses, the conversation will be the same as every time he loses in the finals, I guess, except for the first one, which is, well, now he can never pass Michael Jordan. It's too late. He can never do it now. We'll overreact like crazy and talk about LeBron's shortcomings as a leader, and all, you know, we'll see exactly how it unfolds. To come up with the talking points, but he'll get criticized like crazy. There's a lot of pressure on both, and there is pressure on Durant for all the reasons you said, but the way we treat LeBron, I think it's always LeBron.
Yeah, I mean, that's probably fair. And don't get me wrong, I'm definitely on the side of, like, knocking LeBron. Not so much because I want to knock LeBron, I'm just tired of the people who constantly want to praise him, and this last week or two, it's been insufferable. But that's it. I figured, all right, you know, it did sort of feel like, hey, you know, at least, you know, like I said, he did win one, and, you know, I don't personally think he's catching Jordan, but whatever. That's another conversation. I won't burden you with my nonsense there. One last thing before I ask you to make a pick on this finals. You're a guy who's a Detroit Pistons guy. You've covered the Pistons for many years for many different folks. And so, like me, you're in depth on that team. You're trying to figure out what are the moves that they need to make. Obviously, it was a disappointing year for the Pistons to not even make the playoffs. But, you know, you can look optimistically. They've got some pieces, and Stan Van Gundy, you can believe in him and things like that. But one thing I've talked about with the Wizards recently is, for all the conversations that I have about them, they need to get, can they get another piece to join Wall and Beal? You know, where's Otto Porter's upside? What else can they do? It almost feels like it's just talking into the wind, because until LeBron stops being LeBron, what are we talking about here? I mean, and then if you factor in Golden State on the other side, even if you could somehow get past LeBron inexplicably, the Golden State roadblock is there. Does it make it, again, I know the Pistons are a little bit further along perhaps than the Wizards are, but, or further behind, but does it feel like on some level that if you really look at it like that, like, kind of like, what are we doing here? At least in the NFL, literally almost any team could rise up in any given year and make the Super Bowl, but it just doesn't feel like in the NBA right now that's even a hope.
Yeah, I mean, I guess it just depends on what expectations are. On one hand, it seems like the Wizards, when they talk about their goal, they always go, "Oh yeah, we want to make it to the conference finals." And I think that's just exactly what you're talking about—the sense of defeat. That, look it, what are we supposed to do about LeBron? Like, our goal is to be the best team in the East that doesn't have LeBron. And then some point, like the Wizards may be okay. Like one, if they can make a conference finals, and even where they got this year, like that's a fine year. That's like a good year. There's no shame in that. And they're still a fairly young team. I guess between Wall, Beal, Porter, even Markieff Morris. Obviously, I figure out a center who's going to still be around for that next level. But as the Wizards grow together, if they can keep this together, LeBron is aging. He is 32. He won't be around forever. The Wizards are in decent shape to be positioned to be peaking at the same time LeBron potentially declines. Like, you can't just wait forever for him. And so you got to hope that, yeah, if you're the Wizards, LeBron will start to decline within the next couple of years. He might not. It might be longer than that. You saw how long Michael Jordan lasted into his 30s playing at an elite level. But if you hope he declines in the next couple of years, and that's when your window opens.
Yeah, now of course and we're just focusing on LeBron, who frankly, until he ever gets injured for real, I'm just going to assume he's a cyborg that'll play forever because there's no proof that suggests he's ever slowing down or ever getting injured or wearing down. But at the same point, the Celtics obviously are pretty loaded. Well, they're not loaded the current roster, but with their assets they have, they're in position to go to the next level. And then you have Milwaukee, who is all kinds of interesting, I think. And then you have Philadelphia, who, we'll see what happens. We've been waiting for a minute for that process to work out. But with what they have, I do wonder a little bit for the Wizards if by the time LeBron does maybe show some signs of slowing down, that these other teams who've been sort of more at the bottom than the Wizards have been in recent years start to move past them. But whatever, that's a topic for future Locked On Wizards podcasts. And we are here once again with Mr. Dan Feldman from NBC Sports' Pro Basketball Talk. And Dan, I want to get into this John Wall stuff that you've been writing about. You've written two things. One, which I think you just put up today or yesterday, having to do with John Wall's the Wizards bench and John Wall's thoughts on that. So I don't want to step on that. I'll have people go check that out on Pro Basketball Talk. But you did write a little more a few days back about John Wall's contract situation, and you have on here a tremendous flow chart. I'll tweet out the link on at Locked On Wizards later today. It's a great flow chart because this whole idea of, hey, John Wall, he made an All-NBA team. Now he can get this Supermax contract. Great. Well, it's way more complicated than that. And I don't know how you can explain this entire flow chart in a conversation here, but I guess give it your best shot. Now that John Wall got this flow chart, got this All-NBA team and this opportunity for this contract that comes with it, he could sign an extension now, but see ya. Now, Dan, before you get into your flow chart, here is what John Wall said about the potential for the Supermax situation. On exit interview day, he was going to be announced, we found out, to an All-NBA team a few days later, but here's what John Wall had to say about that possibility.
There was a new provision put in the CBA for the designated player and veteran provision that could apply to you if you make an All-NBA team. Are you aware of that provision and the extensions that it allows? And would you be interested in discussing your contract this summer, even though you still have a couple of years to go?
Yeah, I know all about those. You know, we haven't talked to my agents and stuff like that. I don't know if I have talked about extension and all that because so much more you can get later down the road and what's at stake. And I just sit back with my family, my team, and see what we want to talk about and see if there's anything to discuss this season, this summer, or just wait.
Take it from there. What are the options truly for him, and where do you kind of think this thing goes?
All right, so John Wall has 2 years left on his contract. He's locked up for 2 years. If the Wizards don't want him going anywhere for 2 years, he's not going anywhere. This summer, he's eligible, because he made this All-NBA team, to sign a designated veteran player extension. We don't know, first of all, any number I give here, they're all just projections because we don't know how much the salary cap's going to be next season, let alone 3 years from now when this would kick in. So those next 2 years he's locked in, this would kick in 3 years from now, and he could sign a four-year, $168 million extension. That's available now. It might never be available again. If he passes on this and doesn't make another All-NBA team, he won't have that option of signing that Supermax contract. So it's only available guaranteed right now. Essentially, he would have the ability to get that by making All-NBA in one of the next 2 years if he passes on it now. If he passes now and makes All-NBA next season, he could sign that extension, but instead of 4 years, it'd be the same rate, but for a fifth year also. So there's some benefit there for both the Wizards and Wall to have that longer-term security by waiting, but he would have to make an All-NBA team again to be eligible. If he passes again next summer, he could make an All-NBA team the following year and re-sign for that designated veteran player rate. But by that point, the Wizards are going to be in the same boat the Pacers are in with Paul George, where you don't know whether he's going to make it until free agency. So do you want to trade him? Like, do you want to trade him before? So if it gets to that point, you're going to see all kinds of John Wall trade rumors. There's a lot of money to be made if he signs it this year, but he also doesn't sound super thrilled with how this team is built. He, like you mentioned, he's brought up the bench as a complaint. In the past, he talked about a lack of billboards. So I don't know if this is just about the money. If it's about the money and the security, he'll sign this year. But he could bet on himself, get the same amount of money by making an All-NBA team and apply pressure to the Wizards to upgrade their roster. So it just depends how much appetite for risk he has.
So so one thing you just said and all that that I guess I wasn't quite sure about. So because he made the All-NBA team this year, he's eligible for this thing. But if next year he doesn't make it, which considering the guards in this league, no matter how good John Wall is, he only made the third team this year, but that was with Chris Paul being hurt. Kyle Lowry missed a bunch of games, and you know there's other things that'll change. So if he doesn't make it next year, then he's no longer eligible at that point to sign one of these max, supermax contracts.
Correct. You can only sign it during the off season, so you'll know going into the season what route he took. So it's not like he can identify during the year next year, well, I'm not playing so well, some other guards are, let me sign it real quick. You got to do it during the offseason. So if he doesn't sign it this year, and he doesn't make All-NBA next year, then there's no way he signs a contract extension. Because at that point, if we're talking 2 summers from now, well, he could get that higher max by making All-NBA 2 years from now. But if he hasn't signed it yet and didn't make All-NBA next year, well, then he wouldn't lock into the smaller amount. So if he doesn't sign it this year and doesn't sign it next year, well, then he's definitely headed into free agency.
Gotcha. Now, I would just cautious anybody, and I think, Dan, from your perspective where you come from this, looking at it from the outside, totally get why you know your sense of John Wall's tone and listening to what he said. I mean, he actually said words, and you're interpreting what he said. As somebody who's around him a lot, though, similar to when everybody made a big kerfuffle over his comments about Bradley Beal before the start of last season, made that a big deal. And I said at the time, look, it's not really that big of a deal. And people blew it up. And then obviously as the year went on, I think we all saw that that really wasn't a big deal. I don't think it's as big of a deal about the idea of the billboards or about the idea of the bench. I mean, obviously he thinks about his place in the league, and look, he joined with LeBron's team, and you know, I suspect that'll bear fruit for him going forward. It's LeBron's agency, I mean, you know, his team that way. And you know, the bench, yeah, who could argue that the bench was not great this year? I mean, it was obviously problematic, and the Wizards don't have a ton of room for that, but I suspect that wouldn't be the ultimate reason for him to go. I think he does like it here, and so I suspect it's not as dire sounding based on what he said. All that said, he's a guy that, you know, like a lot of these NBA guys, he seems to like being out in L.A. He goes to hang out there a lot in the offseason, and that's always an alluring place for a guy in this league. He's still pretty, you know, still relatively young. And you know, look, you know, the tone in the NBA now is if you don't win a championship, you're a loser, which is an unfortunate tone, to be honest with you. But that's the way things are. And if he doesn't view that the Wizards can get past LeBron or whatever it is, then maybe he becomes one of those guys that wants to join – you know, a super team. I don't know. I won't even make you hesitate to guess, because who the hell knows where this is going. But let me ask you this. Is there an argument to be made for the Wizards not to give John Wall this massive deal? And I say it just for this hypothetical reason. If you need one of the five best players in the league to more or less win a title, or you need, as say, maybe the Golden State, I mean, Durant's one of the five best players, and maybe so is Steph Curry, but you know, Golden State has 3 and 4 of the guys like that. if that's the case, as good as John Wall is, he's arguably not one of the 10 best players in the league, right? Could you make an argument that for the Wizards, giving John Wall that kind of money, no matter how good he and Bradley Beal become, isn't going to ultimately be enough to really win, and therefore maybe you don't make that investment? Maybe you look to trade him and to some degree start over building around what else you have? Or is that just stupid talk and I should just shut the hell up?
No, it's very reasonable. And this is the unintended consequence of this new designated veteran player rule that we're seeing. John Wall will be 29 when that contract would kick in. Do you want to pay him into his 30s this extra money? Like, that's an age where a lot of players start to decline. And we're talking about where he is now. I would venture to guess that if he signs that contract, he will not be as good then when that contract extension ends as he is now. So there definitely is a case. The question the Wizards have to ask is, what's the alternative in two senses? One, if you trade Wall, like, what are you going to get for him? And two, is he more valuable in a trade if he signs the extension or if he doesn't? Because you can sign him to the extension, wait a year, and then trade him. If you sign him, you can't trade him for a year. But I don't think they'd be looking to move him that quickly anyway. You can get some of his better years and see where it goes. You don't have to be committed to trading him. But you could sign the extension with the thought in mind that, look, in a year we're going to unload him. Would he have more value with the extension or without, with that high salary or not? And it's a tough question. This is what teams are being forced into, and it's not always the best thing for, I don't want to necessarily call Washington a small market, but for these non-huge markets to be pressed into having to pay their star players more. The idea was, okay, I'll make it easier for them to keep these players, but it also makes it harder to build a team around them.
Yeah, no, and you know what? John Wall, again, great year. I would mock anybody who questioned the year he had. There's still some people around this in these parts who still do question him. But he does have the type of game that, to me, when he starts to decline, the drop could be significant, because he still mm-hmm. doesn't have any a real consistent outside shot. And once that speed goes away, just even a little bit, then you really have to wonder, what does he do as a player? Obviously, he's a great passer, but it's his speed that fuels everything. And if that drops off a little bit and the jumper isn't there, I can see a steep decline where, say, a guy, I don't know, who's an older point guard in the league, Chris Paul. A little bit smaller. Chris Paul, because he can shoot, I think he can stick around a little bit longer, guy like that. All right, well, unless you got anything else to say on that, I'll just ask you for your NBA Finals prediction, because I realized I skipped over that before. Everybody has to get put on the spot. What do you
I guess I'd go something like Warriors in 5 or 6. I think, just sort of set a baseline, I think the Warriors were the better team last year. And you play that series 100 times, I think the Warriors win the majority of them. And it's not to take away anything from the Cavs. They won in reality. They deserve the title. All the credit to them. It just helps me set a baseline for this year. I think the Warriors are better than the Cavs overall. I think the Warriors are better than they were last year. And I think the matchups, the style, all the things we talked about with Kevin Love tend to favor the Warriors. That said, I wouldn't be surprised if Cleveland won, because of everything we've said with Kevin Love, how he's improving handling that style. And then, of course, because Cleveland has LeBron. Like, LeBron willed the Cavs to that win last year. I could see him doing that again.
For the sake of my timeline, I hope that doesn't happen. That's all I'm going to say. Dan, man, I really appreciate it. Again, I'm sure you already do if you're an NBA junkie, but go follow Dan on Twitter, @DanFeldmanNBA, and definitely go look at his two articles on John Wall. I'll put the links up on @LockedOnWizards. Dan, great stuff as always. Hope you're surviving the long off season for you, especially since the Pistons did not do you right this year. I'm sorry about that.
They're at least doing me a favor by moving downtown to walking distance from me. I appreciate that more than anything they do out in the court.
There you go. It always is about, it's got to be about you. I mean, the collective you. So, yeah, good. I'm glad that works out. Glad that worked out for you. All right. So, Dan, thanks for your time. Thank you guys for listening, as always, to the Locked On Wizards podcast. And until next time.
Everybody just Beal gets open for three. Dagger!
Home drive, off-balance shot. Dagger! Not ball.